You're with Brian McClain on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
San Francisco's small businesses are closing in waves as just 24% of office workers return. Big tech workers like Google are slow hiring, and the city center devolves into an open-air drug market. San Francisco's small businesses are closing down in waves as tech workers remain slow to return to the office. Why would you return at this point, dear listener? I ask you, how many of you are sitting at home right now listening to this in front of your computer screen, working a tech job? They are abundant, I will tell you. Remote work tech jobs are available in a vast abundancy. So, young listener out there, or recently unemployed listener out there, I recommend you don't go back into the office. No, thank you. I'm not going into back to cubicle life. No, thanks. This is actually working out okay, if you ask me. It used to be, before 2020, it was like remote work was a sort of an anathema, right? Nobody wanted to mess with hiring remote workers because they couldn't subjugate them in the way that you can in a normal cubicle space, right? The whole The Office, right? The Office. I like that show. I had a lot of laughs at that show because they were so good at setting up the archetypal figures in a cubicle environment. And any of us that have worked in similar environments, no matter what the corporate structure is, it's very different when you're working at home. And once you get everybody at home, once you get middle management at home and not wanting to go back in, watch out. Watch out. You can't tell me that this was an unexpected result of lockdowns, right? And of course, working remotely for tech jobs, well, that is the future, right? That is where we're probably headed in a great reset, fourth industrial revolution, pandemic industrial complex sort of paradigm, right? I think that's the trajectory here. So I'm not even going to bother reading you the rest of the article here. It has a lot in it. I recommend you check it out. It's at thedreaddailymail.co.uk. But it's pretty interesting. They go into the drug problems that have hampered the situation. And it's a bit of a mess. It's a bit of a mess. And they go into District Attorney Brooke Jenkins, who replaced recalled Chesa Boudin. Very interesting because they are trying to crack down on this now, but it has caused a huge, huge mess. So how's that going to affect San Francisco moving forward? Well, the fact that you can get an application that will tell you which streets to not walk on to avoid massive amounts of human feces says a lot. For a complete list of shows and our schedule offered on TNT Radio, simply visit our website at tntradio.live. We serve up the latest live news and current affairs presented by a host of credible and expert commentators who can separate fact from fiction and truth from propaganda right here on TNT Radio.
Abroad or at home, this is your news.
By staying silent, we are part of the problem.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. My next guest is waiting on the line here. He's going to be joining us momentarily. He's the host of a podcast called The Oddcast, and his call sign is Odd Man Out. Mr. Jason Hodge, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, man. Thank you for having me. It's good to talk to you.
Yeah. Thanks for taking the time. Appreciate you joining the Brian McClain Show here. And this is a good day for it. This is a good day for it because you and I, we're colleagues. We know how each other roll. We know each other's interests. And I don't know if you were able to hear that last hour or not. I know you're busy doing family stuff today, but we were talking about George Soros and all of the George Soros-backed district attorneys all over the country. It's pretty crazy, man. There's like 75 of them that have received millions of dollars in benefits, campaign benefits and support, this kind of stuff. And Soros's whole thing seems to be reimagining the justice system under the auspices of like a social justice sort of lens. And he's willing to give millions upon millions upon millions of dollars to municipalities, to cities, to district attorney candidates, district attorney offices and on and on and on. So we've got like Cook County, we've got Philadelphia, we got San Francisco, we got Los Angeles, we got all these places that are exploding, absolutely exploding with crime. I've had a few law enforcement professionals on and security professionals like Kent Moyer and Pat Jordan on the show. And they're confirming for me and our listeners exactly what the situation is there. And it has a lot to do with Prop 47 having been passed, which makes it such that many crimes are not taken into court. You know what I mean? A lot of people are just released. It's racially motivated. There's all this stuff going on. And to myself and to my previous guest, Cece Woods, and a lot of our listeners, it almost feels like this is all happening on purpose, Jason. It almost feels like this couldn't be an accident, because the effects that we're seeing are the exact opposite. You know what I mean? Like his recent opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal, everything he's saying is the opposite of what's happening. He's saying this agenda is aiming at safety and justice. It's based on common sense. It's popular. It's effective. And it wants to foster partnership among the policed and the police. So what are your thoughts on this in general, as far as Soros being involved here in the United States and how that is affecting, you know, places like Philadelphia, places like San Francisco, LA, Chicago, where his DAs are in place and they're not pursuing bail or crime at all on many violent felons?
Well, you know, it's hard to kind of understand what he really thinks about this whole thing and how the measures that he's supporting are going to turn out. Is he really idealistic enough to think that it's going to be this kind of fair and balanced judicial system? I don't think so. I don't think he thinks that. I mean, I just don't think he's a smart guy. There's no question. I don't think he could actually think that. So it's kind of like, seems to me he has an agenda to maybe he wants to see America just crushed and rebuilt, like you said, the reimagining, because that's kind of what he does internationally. You know, he kind of breaks up these countries or waits till they have economic problems and then seizes on the opportunity. So maybe he is kind of thinking, well, if I break America, then it can be rebuilt the way I want to do it, the way my son and my institutions want it to be, because it just doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, it's so obvious that crime is going up, and it you know, we go from one extreme to the other. You know, I think you and I would agree that there's problems with politics, there's problems with the judicial system, the courts, the prisons, the prison industrial complex and all that stuff. But it goes from one extreme to the other, you know, with him. And then there's the people that think that there's nothing wrong. So I think that it's very dangerous, and it's pretty obvious that it's purposeful, that he's pushing these things on purpose for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I agree. And we've got other countries like Russia, for example. Here's a headline from one of our chat regulars here. Russia cancels resident permit of George Soros linked human rights activist, gives her 2 weeks to leave. So you've got one of his agents there basically in Russia, a human rights activist, and Russia said, get out, we're canceling you. Here's something else out of Russia here. This is from Reuters. Russia bans George Soros Foundation as a state security threat. Russia banned pro-democracy charity founded by hedge fund billionaire and philanthropist George Soros, saying it posed a threat to both state security and the Russian Constitution. In a statement released, Russia's General Prosecutor's Office said two branches of Soros's charity network, the Open Society Foundations and the Open Society Institute Assistance Foundation, would be basically have to leave Russia. So there are countries that see this guy's track record, and that's kind of what I wanted to talk to you about a little bit. I also want to talk to you about the FBI a little bit later in the hour if there's time, but we're going to take a break in about 6 minutes here for a quick station break. But What's the deal? Like, what can we tell our listeners? I know you've looked into this. What can we tell our listeners about what happens in other countries when the Open Society gets involved there? How does this philanthropy, billionaire philanthropy, actually work out on the ground? You know, maybe we could use like Ukraine and Russia as an example, or anywhere else that might be on your mind.
Yeah, well, it's pretty much anywhere that the Open Society is, and if they have a large presence in that country, there's political things going on, political uprisings, it seems like Kazakhstan and Ukraine and these different places where these color revolutions have been. Every time you look, there is the Open Society Foundation, and they're right along with the National Endowment for Democracy, and a lot of times USAID will be there, and maybe Freedom House. And it seems like that Open Society works hand in hand with NED, which is an arm of the CIA, and that's been known for probably 30 years when official ex-CIA people came out and said that. They created it under Ronald Reagan in the guise of spreading democracy around the world. So the Open Society has been there since the 90s, working hand in hand with these organizations, right where these countries are having major issues with their governments. I think there's coups being, you know, being created by the intelligence community. I think we all can agree on that. And so I've even read from Soros himself, who talked about under Clinton, his organization, Open Society, worked hand in hand with the Clinton Foundation. They didn't work hand in hand with George H.W. Bush's foundation, or excuse me, his presidency and his administration, but they did with the Clinton administration. So I think that that's a real eye opener there, because it can't all be a coincidence. You know, you kind of like start to gather this information and see you see it right there. Open Society Foundation, Color Revolution, you know, time and time again. And you have to understand that he likes to break these countries up and break their banks up and then buy everything at bottom dollar prices, whether it's real estate or companies or whatever. And that's, you know, he's talked about that. He's been pretty open about that. So I think that people just look back to the Rockefellers and the Ford foundations and these other foundations. I think in the 50s, they had that, the Reese Committee investigated a bunch of these foundations and found out that they were doing all kinds of shady things, but it was shut down from within because they had their people inside our government already. So I think we can look back and see that philanthropy has been the kind of go-to for a lot of these very powerful businessmen to get what they want done under, you know, under this kind of facade of helping people and doing things that are good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you look at the opensocietyfoundations.org website, it's right there on their site here. You can look at their expenditures by sector in the Ukraine and in Europe and Eurasia. So just in 2020, the expenditures for Europe and Eurasia were $169 million. $169 million going to, and you got to love this, you got to love the way they title all of their different expenditure classifications, because it sounds great on the face of it all. Democratic practice. Okay, that's the number two. The number two expenditure is in the swim lane of what the Open Society calls democratic practice. So how's that work? That could mean anything. And the number one expenditure sector is health and human rights. So health and human rights, democratic practice. And to the Ukraine, in 2020 alone, $9.8 million, so almost $10 million to Ukraine in 2020. How'd that work out? Where's that money all go? What does it mean? What are the sub-expenditures under democratic practice? What are the sub-expenditures under health and rights? That's a lot of money, odd man out, and I don't know if that's helping anyone. They also put money into journalism, justice reform and the rule of law, human rights movements and institutions, higher education, equality and anti-discrimination, economic equality and justice, and education and early childhood. What do they mean by all of these things? It sounds so good to the utopian mind out there, to someone who thinks a philanthropist is actually a philanthropist and not a ghoul going around starting colored revolutions and pushing lockdowns and pushing vaccine mandates and adding CRT and extreme sex ed into schools, corrupting journalistic outlets, corrupting the rule of law, reforming justice. What would George Soros know about reforming justice in a place like Ukraine that's actually housing Azov Battalion Nazis and the like? How is this old fart going to reform any of that? We're going to find out from Odd Man Out on the other side of a quick break here. You're listening to Today's News Talk.
You should hear what Jesse Zerowell is talking about.
The Biden administration plans to declare the monkeypox outbreak a public health emergency in an effort to galvanize awareness and unlock additional flexibility and funding to fight the virus's spread. So it seems that round two of another viral delusion is underway. There are so many things to say about this. One of them being that while they say there are over 6,000 confirmed cases, I have yet to see anybody in the news who's been confirmed to be infected with monkeypox.
Jesse Zerowell on Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
Democracy in action. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
That's right. Free speech in action right here on the Brian McClain Show. Today's News Talk, TNTRadio.live. That's where you find us on the interwebs. Get on over there. Get that mobile app. Just look up TNT Radio in that Google Play Store or the Apple Store. You'll find the app up there. It's great. I'm joined by Jason Hodge, the odd man out of the Oddcast, which you can find at alternatecurrentradio.com. We're talking about George Soros here, man. What do you think about that? Why can't we get audits from all of this garbage, right? I want to see an audit of where all this money is going. I learned on the show the other day, Jason, that they're saying that only 30% of the weapons that we're sending over there in these giant, giant multi-bazillion dollar packages are actually landing in the hands of Ukrainian soldiers on the front line. That's 70% of our gear just going into a black hole once it leaves this country. I'm so annoyed by that. I can't stop thinking about that. And then I look at philanthropists like this who have their fingers in our cities where violence is rising. And what do you know? You can kind of graft that onto what's going on in Ukraine and say, well, what was Soros doing over there in 2020 with his $9.8 million that went into those expenditures that I mentioned? I mean, I smell a rat without even knowing much more than what I just said.
Yeah, I mean, he's been pouring money into Ukraine since the 90s. I want to say maybe 92 or 93. So, I mean, millions of dollars. And, you know, when he realized that the Soviet Union was beginning to break, he started buying property and businesses, you know, at bottom dollar prices there, and ended up controlling a lot of the science, the scientific studies on medicines and different things like that there. You know, the guy's just not to be trusted. And, you know, even in his famous 60 Minutes interview, he admitted that, you know, he has all these offshore accounts because he doesn't want to have to go by the rules and the regulations of America, you know, of the United States. So it's like he, you know, on one hand, it's kind of like a major, what do they call it when you, do something, a virtue signaling kind of, you know, with the philanthropy in a way, right, or moral self-licensing. You know, he does something good so he can justify doing all these bad things, you know. So he does do some good things. But if you look at a lot of these, as far as education goes, a lot of these courses and these different things that he funds, it's just causing more and more, division between the people, the citizens, and it's teaching these younger people to blame people who aren't really even necessarily to blame for their problems, you know? So it's not like he's pouring money in the inner cities to kind of help change the culture and, you know, try to help people to live a better life like that. It's not like he's pouring, as far as I know, millions of dollars into Africa to teach people how to farm on the land and how to, you know, dig wells and do all these different things. He may be doing some of that, but it's obvious that the majority of what he's doing, his money is going to division, to change, fundamentally change, like Obama said, fundamentally change or transform America. Mm-hmm. That seems to be his goal. I know I even read that he was disappointed in Obama. He said that he wasn't, I don't know if he said liberal enough or the term he used, but he meant he didn't really change things as much as he'd wanted him to. It's kind of like he talks out of both sides of his mouth, you know, and he's probably the most dangerous man in America. I mean, really, I think that he's caused so much damage. It's untelling. And like I said earlier, he talks a good game about the things he wants to do, but it ends up being these drastic measures that are changing things way too much and not really fixing the problem. It's just creating new problems.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And what is his citizenship anyways? Is this guy an American citizen? Is he a dual citizen? Is he a multi-citizen? Is he just a hashtag global citizen? Like, I'm curious to know that. I don't expect you to know, but if you do, I'm curious.
Well, I read that he did, I think he became an American in the late 60s, if I remember correctly. But, you know, he could be a dual citizen for all we know, because I don't think he has to reveal that. But yeah, it's very possible.
Interesting. Well, you're right. On that same page I'm looking at here on their own website, they state that there's a open society group called the International Renaissance Foundation, and this foundation was established in Kiev in April of 1990, shortly before Ukraine became independent from the Soviet Union in August of 91. And this IRF, that's the International Renaissance Foundation, the IRF had satellite offices in Odessa, Kharkiv, Lviv, and Dnipro, and employed more than 60 people amongst those offices. So they've quite literally been occupying space in the main provinces of Ukraine since 1990. And you know, they were there in 2014 when things started to get really ugly. They, check this out. The foundation was one of the first major donors to respond to the COVID-19 pandemic in Ukraine in 2020. Emergency funding, blah, 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 health and public across digital media. They say also that, there's probably too many of these little bullet points for me to read. Each one of them is very interesting, because here's another example. In 2015, local groups supported by the foundation brought about wholesale reform of the ministry's health system for procuring HIV and tuberculosis medication and other essential medications after they exposed overwhelming evidence of corruption among Ukrainian distribution firms. It's like, okay, maybe they did expose some corruption. It's one of the most corrupt countries in Europe, hands down. That's a fact. But or did he just clear the way for more big pharma coming in? You know what I mean? There's a lot of big pharma push I see here hidden inside the whole health, you know, labeling that they put for putting millions of dollars into this country every year.
Yeah, I think that's part of his genius too with his philanthropic organizations, because he's got the cover as, you know, we're helping people, we're doing all these nice things, but he's also able to invest in the things that he's kind of involved in, and he makes a killing, you know, almost every time. I mean, there's a reason why he can speculate on things, and just, you know, many, many people will follow whatever he does because he's made so much money and he's made so many smart decisions as far as economics goes on his own part, not good decisions as far as other countries go by any means. And he's even admitted that, you know, he says that he's not really, what he does is not moral. It does, you know, this investing and these speculating and different things like that, there's no morality about it. It's just what he does. You know, he kind of justifies it like that, but it has real world consequences on real human beings. So it's, you know, this guy, he's something else. I just noticed the other day, there's a new book. I think it's called The Open Society Playbook. And so I'm kind of interested to see about that. It says it really exposes the network, and it is a vast network. You know, I got into it a little bit on a couple of shows, actually just one show that I did on him, but I just touched on it. But there are so many different organizations that he funds, and a lot of people don't realize that he funds them, because he will give money to, like you said, the International Renaissance Foundation or one of his other organizations that people are not even aware of, and then they will donate to another organization on his behalf. So people have no clue that it's even George Soros funding these things. Like I saw, I forget the name, I want to say it's the Freedom of the Press. Whoever is affiliated with Edward Snowden, it's that organization, and he's a huge funder of that. So that kind of makes you, you know, curious about that. I saw it the other day too, that he's funding an organization that Roger Waters is very closely tied to. And I like some of the things that Waters is saying, but you know, it's crazy how many organizations he's funding. It's just spread all over the world, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you think there aren't strings attached to this funding, folks, and if you think there isn't income coming in that outweighs the donations and funding going out, you would be wrong. It is a giant cash grab. It is a giant power play. And what Jason just said right there about what Soros himself admitted totally destroys his cover, his label as a philanthropist, because a philanthropist does not do things with no morals in mind. We're going to go to a quick break here, everybody. This is Today's News Talk.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines.
Indian traders have reportedly been settling payments for Russian coal in an effort to skirt Western sanctions imposed on Moscow in recent months in response to its latest war with Ukraine. American solar energy companies are having difficulty complying with a law that went into effect in June, requiring importers to prove their goods are not tainted with slave labor from the oppressed Uyghur Muslims of China's Xinjiang province.
At TNT Radio, we never go home. We're committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7 online globally, no matter what. We've got you covered on TNT Radio.
All right. I don't think anyone needs any more convincing, probably, that listen to this show. But just to add one more piece of one more droplet of kerosene to the fire here that we're lighting under Open Society's ass, because they deserve it. Here's another bullet point out of the International Renaissance Foundation, which is a Open Society satellite office. The foundation has supported the development of independent media outlets in Ukraine and has supported a range of fact-checking initiatives and other efforts to counter disinformation and promote informed public debate. Odd man out, do we even need to? Do we even need to? Look at the Lyra situation. Look at the way Ukrainian forces just bombed a hotel. They just shelled a hotel where Eva Bartlett was staying and other independent journalists. People were killed out front. It was horrible. And these independent media outlets they're talking about in these bullet points here, those were shut down if they were even anything that was remotely independent or remotely hadn't taken a side even between Russia and Ukraine and were just trying to put truth out there. Those were shut down big time. And journalists were subjugated, arrested, threatened, that kind of stuff. So obviously their bullet points are not as philanthropic as they read.
Yeah. And, you know, with funding, there's kind of an unsaid kind of thing there where people won't rock the boat too hard unless they really have integrity because they know where that money's coming from. And, you know, nobody wants to lose money unless you've got more than enough. So it really has an effect. And I'm sure that Soros knows that, and he knows he can affect what these people report. And he's got a good thing going there because he's kind of shielded by most of the mainstream media, I think, in the United States. And I don't know about other places, but, you know, they just kind of say, like, I've seen a lot of this going around the last couple of years. Well, you're anti-Semitic. Like Max Boot actually, he tweeted that out the other day. Any conservatives who talk about George Soros are anti-Semitic. That's basically what he said. I'm paraphrasing, but I'm like, what? That doesn't even, nobody's even mentioned anything about that. So I think they're really trying to keep people from talking about him or critiquing him at all. You know, I did the, that one show I did on him. There was Glenn Beck, you know, who was on Fox at one time. And he said that, Roger Ailes told him straight up, don't talk about Soros. So, you know, I think that that's probably a given. I think most people probably know that. And if they don't, they probably find out pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's funny, though. You know, I think the days of that part, that particular pejorative against people is wearing really, really thin because of people that do good research. You know, all the people that inspired us and now us, you know, you've done great research on Soros and there's nothing anti-Semitic about the numbers. There's nothing anti-Semitic about the actions. There's nothing anti-Semitic about looking at their own documents that they post publicly and comparing them to what we see happening on the ground. There's nothing to do with anti-Semitism when it comes to this stuff. It doesn't. I don't care or know or give a crap about the ethnicity or alliances with regards to other countries or any of this stuff with these DAs that he's spent millions and millions of dollars putting into our cities that now have explosions in violent crime and absolute degradation of the complete society and the education system. I mean, look at this. Okay, they use these labels to discuss their expenditures in Ukraine, right? Democratic practice, early childhood education, economic equality and justice. Equality and anti-discrimination, health rights, higher education, human rights movements and institutions, digital rights and information, journalism, justice reform, and rule of law. Every single one of those departments still here in the United States, if we graft this out of Ukraine and back into the United States, we see these same ambiguous expenditure titles with no subtitles in them, no auditing that we can see whatsoever. And then we see the places where his installs, his little puppets have been placed, and all those expenditure areas I just read are suffering. They're all in decline. They're all experiencing cultural collapse right now. And we're still to call this guy a philanthropist. We're to be looked at as anti-Semites for pointing out what we can openly see here with this guy that just trounces around the world and drops hundreds of millions, nay, billions, tens of billions, hundreds of billions. We don't know how much money into all these different NGOs, all these different stupid things like the International Renaissance Foundation, and we don't know what the hell they do. All we know is it looks like something out of Phantasm, like he's some demon that comes into a country or a city or a state or a town and then turns everybody into zombies, rapes it, takes everything that has any soul there, and moves on.
Yeah, it's unbelievable what he's been able to accomplish. And, you know, as I said earlier, and I know you know probably even better than I because you've been looking at this for quite a while, but these various color revolutions, you know, his group is always there, and He sees a problem, or maybe even helps create the problem, and then expands on it, and is able to make a lot of money from that. And it doesn't seem like that these countries ever are very much better off with all this money being poured into them and all this supposed help. So what's really the end goal, and what's really going on there? That's my question, you know, because things just don't add up. I mean, the millions of dollars that he's poured into Ukraine, and then of course our State Department and others as well, and it's just been corrupt to the hilt for years and years. And you know, so all that money pouring in there, God knows where it's going to or who it's going to, but it doesn't appear to be helping. They just keep ending up with corruption. So you know, he's getting something from it, and it's not just the satisfaction of helping these people in these countries. He's making money out of it, and you know, setting up something maybe perhaps for his son to take over, because he's left all his money, most of his money, to this philanthropic organization, the Open Society, and they'll be carrying on long after he's dead, for sure.
Oh yeah. It's like the Rockefeller Foundation or the Ford Foundation. These people, they know how to set these things up. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, that guy could explode in his lavender sweater, his lavender cardigan. He could spontaneously combust tomorrow, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation will still continue doing what it is doing. These things are, all these philanthropic front groups are set up to do exactly that, to wreak generational damage and wealth consolidation and power consolidation in perpetuity. So that's the whole thing with these. That's the whole goal with these things. It's and you know, the thing that gets me, you know, Odd Man, I was talking earlier in the show about this whole idea of heroes and villains. You know, like I played the clip of the Trump like pseudo campaign video that he put out almost at the exact same time, right in the wake of the raiding of Mar-a-Lago. And you know, it's like, as much as we hate this whole Biden regime and this whole Great Reset and all this Soros involvement, it's hard to look for a hero in here that's going to actually do what you would expect a hero would. But the same goes for villains, you know. Soros himself and Gates and Fauci and various other people are presented to us as the lightning rod for villainry. But the network around these people, you know, that missing audit, that missing context, that missing mapping out of the relationships and the planning and the emails and the networking and the financial exchanges that happen between Soros and X amount of other variables within and without his own organization and other governments. I mean, that's the scary thing, that this organization is allowed to do this kind of stuff. You know what I mean? So it's like, we've got the lightning rod here. You and I are roasting them good. Me and CeCe roasted them good. The mass media, it's fair game for them to roast him good now too. We didn't said anything anti-Semitic in the whole run here, because there's nothing anti-Semitic about it. It doesn't have anything to do with that. So yeah, then we get into this territory of being able to have good narratives to tell ourselves, so that our own inaction is understandable, because there's a villain to blame and a hero to hope for, man. I mean, I guess that's sort of my macro/meta analysis of what we're dealing with here, because it does kind of link back to the whole Trump phenomena, to the Mar-a-Lago raid, to Jeffrey Epstein, and right here with George Soros.
Yeah, I mean, it's all connected for sure, you know. I mean, even Trump took a huge loan for Trump Tower from Soros, you know. So, and, you know, it's so hard to, like you said, find a hero in all of this. I wonder sometimes if, you know, with Trump, if he's not just there to kind of, as a really convenient distraction, you know, because it can, you know, whenever all these things are happening to him, or when the you know, the kind of more left-wing media is outraged and talking about him nonstop, then that outrages the right wing and they want to defend him. And I feel like it's almost like Are they just trying to divert our attention away from what they're doing to us by making us focus on Trump? Or if it's not Trump, it's somebody or some other figure. So, you know, they really know how to play us. And, you know, I could be totally off base with that, but I feel like it's so easy to do, you know, because we're so polarized and so blindly, you know, people just, they're so addicted to these parties still, you know, especially their politicians and their presidents. So it's so easy to kind of lead either side, you know, one way or the other when it comes to these guys.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Exactly. It's nuts, man. It is nuts. It's so hard to distinguish what is the grand chessboard and what is real power politic and what is simply illusions whipped up for us by Mirage Men. And with that, I'm going to have to take a quick break here because my security chief is barking at me. So it's top of the hour coming up after this break. And I'm joined by Odd Man Out, and you're listening to Today's News Talk.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
We've made a very serious discovery. If you look at CFACT, I published an article on correlation there. I guess it's a blog nowadays. But the serious discovery is there is a direct correlation between the increase in the price of postage stamps and CO2. Obviously, the increase in postage stamps is causing increasing temperatures and increasing CO2. So the solution is get the price of postal stamps down. Here's another ditty. More people get sunburned and melanoma in the summer. More people also eat ice cream cones during the summer. What does this tell you? We've got to get rid of ice cream. This is WeatherBell.com meteorologist and ice cream lover Joe Bastardi for TNT Radio, reminding you to enjoy your ice cream cone and the weather before someone takes both of them away from you.
Every 2 minutes, an American is sexually assaulted. The majority of victims know their attacker. It could be your friend, your neighbor, or someone you met at a party. If you said no, it's rape, and it's a crime. This is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Call the National Sexual Assault Hotline today at 1-800-656-HOPE. Or visit RAIN.org. That's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Freedom of speech, freedom of movement, freedom of choice, freedom of assembly, freedom of health. The voice of freedom is TNT Radio.
That's right. And you got Hesher and Odd Man out here shouting that voice of freedom on today's news talk. I heard Joe Bastardi there during the break. He's the interweb's best and most favorite weatherman. And he does not look like he eats very much ice cream. That guy is ripped. All right. Shout out to Joe. Okay. Odd Man Out. Welcome back to the show. Final thoughts on Soros. Anything else you want to throw out there about Soros before I start winging some other stuff at you?
Well, one thing I was just thinking too is it may be that people like the Rockefellers and the Carnegies and Soros, they feel like if they donate all this money towards their goals, you know, they've accomplished everything. They've got the ladies, they've got the money, they've got the fame and attention. It may be kind of a psychological thing that they know that it just gives them some comfort to know that their money will be going on past them and making, you know, putting their name out there far beyond their own lifetime. So there could be something to that as well. I'm sure there probably is. And that's dangerous. That's idealistic. And it's, you know, with that type of money, it can go, it's so wrong. And it seems like, you know, you have these really idealistic people a lot of times with these organizations that say they want to help people, but they go too far. They become militant. And then a lot of times they just end up trying to milk as much money as they can for themselves by leading these organizations. And I think there's probably a lot of that as well. So this guy's very dangerous. I think people need to Matt Palumbo has a book about him that's pretty good that talks about his organizations. You can kind of find out what he's doing to these local courts. I think that the section he has in that is very meticulous, so people could really get something of that, because it's probably happening in your area. You know, for all I know, he's all over the place with this stuff. So I think people better get informed on this, because it's getting pretty far along, and there's some really bad things happening, and you're going to see more crime go up, I think, if we don't get a hold of it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I really appreciate your insights on all this, because this is serious and this is affecting all of us, especially those of you that live in blue cities with Soros-backed DAs. I'll say it again. The rates have gone up insane style in the places where these people are doing their style of justice reform under the backing, the financial backing of Open Society, of George Soros himself. And whatever that network is, whatever that entire network is that surrounds him, I can guarantee you it is vast, it is large, it is full of Fortune 100, it is full of Democrats, it's full of Republicans, it's full of tech giants, bankers, politicians, and all manner of gangsters and military intelligence. We don't even know. We don't even know. You can guess, put your tinfoil hat on, guess whatever you want, read between the lies. That's all we're able to do here. So that was great. That was great, Odd Man Out. Let me shift gears with you for a moment here. You've been on travel a little bit. I haven't got to talk to you since the Mar-a-Lago thing happened. This whole thing with the FBI being used as a political wedge, a political barricade, if you will, that seems to be the talking point going around here. And I can get down with that. I can see that being the realistic surface level power politic that we're dealing with here. But I've also intimated a little bit on the show here that I'm open-minded to this being a larger set of political theater on some scale, some meta scale, which we'll not be able to put our fingers on. But the net effect is pretty crazy overall. The news pundits are a buzzing. They're using our sort of talking points, almost like what some would consider conspiracy theory talking points, to try to describe what is happening. What do you make of all this, man?
Well, I haven't stayed real up to date with it, unfortunately, but from what I've just seen, just in headlines and a couple of excerpts, you know, it's hard to say, because I think we've known that there's been problems with the FBI for a very long time, and they've abused their power. They've got a history of that. And is that just what's going on here? Is it that plain and simple? Is it something else? Are they trying to kind of plan in people's ideas that the FBI is bad, in just to maybe create the division between left and right? I mean, traditionally the left didn't like the FBI and the right was more apt to, I think, defend them. And now it's completely flipped. So that's crazy too. Is it just a more kind of organized chaos? Will it lead to anything credible? I mean, obviously Hillary never saw any justice, you know, and of course I know that Trump's on the other side, or allegedly on the other side. So I don't know. Are they just trying to provoke his base into acting out? I mean, it seems like, you know, they did that with Jan 6th. I don't know. It's hard for me to say what's going on. A lot of things are going on, and I'm just, honestly, I'm kind of floored. I mean, there's so much that's been happening. It's kind of hard to put your finger on their techniques and where they're, you know, what the end game is, really.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And then check this out. So what you just said right there, like, you know, extreme far right extremist stuff, right? Are we going to whip some of that up? Well, check this out. This happened almost very shortly after.
Tonight, all is calm after a chaotic day in Ohio. A man wore body armor and tried to breach the FBI field office in Cincinnati, then ended up in an hours-long standoff that ended in a shootout in Clinton County. Good evening. Thanks for joining us at 11. I'm Andrew Kinsey. Yolanda has the night off. Police will not confirm the suspect's name, but right now, we've learned who it is. 10TV's Olivia Eugenio has the new details tonight with what we know about him.
A law enforcement official tells the Associated Press that the suspect was 42-year-old Ricky Schiffer. Schiffer was believed to be in Washington, D.C. in the days leading up to the January 6th attack. Now, Schiffer was not charged with any crimes relating to the attack, but a law enforcement official tells the Associated Press that they are investigating if he had any connections to any far-right extremist groups like the Proud Boys. Shortly after 9 this morning, Highway Patrol says an armed man attempted to break into this FBI field office in Cincinnati. The suspect leading officers on a chase on 71.
We initiated contact with the suspect on 71 in Warren County near the rest area.
The suspect firing shots from his...
Okay, so interesting narrative they've woven for us right there in the wake of this one, odd man out. You got to love how they throw in a law enforcement official said. That doesn't mean much. That's an anonymous source. That could be anyone trying to plant anything in the media. It doesn't mean a whole lot. But they say they were investigating if he was connected to far-right extremist groups. And he was believed to be in D.C. leading up to January 6th, but wasn't at January 6th. And the guy's armed with a nail gun and body armor. This is not a serious person. This is not a serious threat. This is a low-level media-manipulated psychopath looking to commit suicide by cop, or it's fake. It's one of those two, in my opinion. Or, yeah, it's got to be one of those two.
Oh, absolutely. And it's just more red meat for the uber-liberal people who want to get rid of guns and think that everyone on the right who stands for personal freedom and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights is a lunatic, because they've been planning that in their heads for decades now. So yeah, I call BS on this. I mean, it's got to be one of the two things that you said. No fool would go into the FBI with a nail gun. I mean, you're going to get killed immediately, and that's just a given. So it makes you wonder if the people that want this to be true will even hear the nail part of it. They'll just hear the gun part and be like, yep, mm-hmm, yeah, I told you we got to get rid of these guns.
Yeah, and body armor too. They had to throw body armor in there because that's one of the other things they're going to be going after in the coming years here. Oh, man. Okay, so does the FBI ever do shady stuff? Let's see. Let's see if I have time to sneak this clip in here. Check this out.
We have breaking news. The FBI says it has thwarted a terror plot.
We targeted four individuals that planned and schemed to bomb two Jewish facilities here in the Bronx, and also to take down a military aircraft up at the Stewart Airport.
They stated that they wanted to commit jihad.
Prosecutors described the suspects as extremely violent men who embraced every opportunity for terrorism. Investigators say the four Muslim men met in prison and hatched the terrorist plot at a local mosque.
I remember he was sitting right over here on that side, and there was a the table here, and he made his statements that a woman should not be seen or heard. And it was like, is this how he introduced himself to us? He's going to tell us women should not be seen or heard?
You'd ask about jihad. You'd ask about a holy war. I did tell different individuals, I said, stay the hell away from him. Some ain't right about it.
He hung around long enough to be able to get somebody to buy into his plot.
To someone like Mr. Cromedy, who had spent his entire life in poverty, trying to support himself as a very low-level marijuana dealer, Mr. Shahid Hussein's wealth, that was a very big thing to him.
It was crazy. All these different news media started converging onto the property, and automatically I knew it was manufactured. I was the first one to say that this was entrapment.
There you go. So, Oddman, that is a clip out of sort of a montage out of a docufilm called The Newburgh Sting, and it's to do with something that happened in 2008. Where the FBI alleged that they thwarted a plan by jihadists to blow up a synagogue or something like that. And this documentary shows how the FBI sent an undercover informant into that into that mosque and infiltrated it and started lurking there and corrupted somebody and then totally entrapped them and set them up for a media event, a highly politicized media event. So they can't tell us this kind of stuff is the thing of mystery or the thing of myth that you and I and our listeners can't know about and talk about and discuss and apply to current news that doesn't make sense. Your final thoughts, man. You got about less than a minute here. Sorry it took so much time there.
No, man. I just want to say quickly, I think about 15 years ago, there was a assistant director of the FBI, Thomas Fuentes, and he said, if you're submitting a budget proposal for law enforcement agencies, for an intelligence agency, you're not going to submit the proposal that we won the war on terror and that everything's great, because the first thing that's going to happen is your budget is going to be cut in half. You know, it's my opposite, or it's the opposite of Jesse Jackson's keep hope alive. It's keep fear alive. Keep it alive. So I think that's, you know what I mean? I fumbled that, but I think you get the drift.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We appreciate you, Odd Man Out. That's Odd Man Out, host of the Oddcast. And this has been the Brian McLean Show here on Today's News Talk. Have a great weekend.